Hey, what's going on out there, everybody? Welcome to another Addicted Fishing podcast. I'm kind of a little bit alone up here, except for our special guest, who I'm going to introduce in just 1 second. But thanks to you guys so much for tuning in. We've got finally got some rain coming. It's pouring down right now. Maybe I'll actually go out and try to do some twitching or try to do something neat. You've been outside a little bit.
I have. It's amazing how people forget the laws of physics still work when it rains outside.
Crazy. Well, you guys, that is the voice of Captain Jeff Wickersham from Region 5 Enforcement Program.
That's correct. Yeah. Thanks for having me here tonight.
Yeah. Awesome. So we've gotten a lot of requests over the years and over the time to bring some of these special guests, and Jeff's been in our, you've been in our neighborhood for a lot of years.
Yep. It's 12 years down here as a supervisor or as a captain now.
Captain. So you guys, we wanted to bring him in. I've got some things. I got some questions for him. You know, he's going to participate in our live feed. If you guys are unfamiliar with that, you guys can go on to our YouTube after it's done on Wednesday nights and check that out. But every Wednesday on YouTube and Facebook at 6:30 p.m., we're going to have our live feed. And Jeff's going to be playing a lot of the what ifs. You like doing the what if game.
The what ifs keep me on my toes. I like it. And I'll see what I can do.
Perfect. Well, just to get started, so you said you've been in here for 12 years.
Yeah, so I got here in 2011 as a sergeant. I'd been down on the coast out of the Raymond area and then Westport as both a land and marine officer. Did stuff offshore, worked our commercial, recreational fisheries, all the hunting. Came up here as a supervisor and got my start in Stevenson, Washington as a supervisor in our Columbia Gorge detachment. That was 2011, and then 2016, things changed, and I got the opportunity to become a captain, and I've been doing that ever since.
And that's out of Region 5. So you guys, for those that don't know, we're based in Southwest Washington, so we run into Captain here, and, quite a few of his guys, quite a bit running around, and we wanted to bring him in here and talk about just some of the what-ifs. I did a post on the Addicted Fishing Forum just a couple days ago and asked, some of the questions that we get. One of the main questions that we got a lot was, what is the definition of a darn misclip? Because we know, God bless our hatchery workers, because without them, we wouldn't have a lot of fish to take home and, to be able to monitor and be able to take care of those fisheries. But sometimes they miss, or sometimes the machines miss. I don't know if they have automated. Do they have automated ones in Washington?
Most of it is automated these days. It's a question we get from the public a lot, wondering, hey, can we keep this or can we not? We'll come up on boats and people sometimes will try to hide the fish because they're worried about it, that it is just not a good clip. And so our honest answer is we're not like Oregon. We don't have this official definition. We always want to look at that healed scar. So whether or not it's on a fish where you can use the ventral clip or whether it's on a fish needing an adipose fin clip, we're looking for that healed scar. And if it's reasonable, we're going to issue a lot of discretion. But the ones we won't issue discretion on is where people hide them from us.
Or they know what's up.
Or if you get there and there's a fresh clip and it's not healed. And we see that, unfortunately, a little too much.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we do.
But so, even if someone had a misclip there, even if it had a healed scar, so a lot of times what I've seen is you'll see, a kind of a healed line, and then you'll see, an adipose fin that's maybe 30%, maybe, of a normal size. Now, obviously, you guys, it's definitions and everything like that. So help me God, if any of you try to tell these enforcement officers out there that you heard us talk about the misclips out there and try to pass that off to another officer somewhere, it's not going to work. It's up to their discretion, but I'm trying to use just some descriptive characteristics about, that's 30% size. You know what I mean? It doesn't work that way. But if it is a misclip and you decide to retain it because you're like, you know what? That's a clip fish. If they clip the remaining off, is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about where people take a wild fish and turn it into a hatchery. Okay. It's pretty rare. I can't say 100% that hasn't happened in your scenario. But most of the time when we find it, it's somebody that knew they couldn't keep something, sure, and they're hoping that maybe they just won't get checked. But in case somebody saw it, maybe the fin's gone, so they're less apt to report it. But on those misclips that they're out there, we're looking for that. I don't know exactly how the system works, but I know that there's a cutting tool. It's taking a nice straight line off. And if we come out there, a normal adipose fin isn't going to be perfectly straight on the top. And so if it's smaller than what we're used to seeing, it's got a healed scar. There's just a tiny bit of the adipose fin left at the back where it's, a quarter, half inch long, but mostly it's gone. That's a misclip. We're going to give a lot of discretion. And the way I look at it is when I take my family out, when I've taken my son out, I have released fish that I was not sure about.
Yes,
and that's because I need to be above board. Integrity for us is key. I don't want there to be any question. My son often looks at me or a few times and has said, "Dad, why'd we let that go?" I said, "Just because I didn't feel good about it." That's what I'd like people to be thinking about. But if people want to roll the dice, healed scar, it should be very obvious. And for to a normal person, if they came up and said, this is what a normal adipose fin looks like, here's what I have, it should be obvious that that is a misclip.
I'm just going to be honest with you. I was out in the ocean just this year, and I've had it happen a few times where a lot of times when you're out ocean coho fishing, a lot of times I'm looking in the water, and most of the time, you know, if it's sunny out, water's pretty clear, you can see if the fish is clipped. And a lot of times if you see the fish is clipped, like I'll see it before I net it, because if not, they're getting the gaff or the screwdriver just to like pop the hooks out off the side of the boat. So I want to net them because it's like just takes time away from my stuff. Well, I had one fish this year. I look out there and I'm like, that one's clipped. Grab me the net. Client hands me the net, net the fish, do the double check as I'm lifting, good, boom, in the boat, back to doing something else, fish is flopping, turn around and look, and there it is. And it was like about a, I mean, it was, I kept it because it was a misclip, and I also just, I threw it in the boat and then left it while I was getting the rods and getting them tagged and getting everything.
Well, the chaos was ensuing, yes.
No, it's coho fishing out in the ocean, you know, like that can go, it's coho rodeo for a reason.
Yep.
But I looked down and it was just like, ooh, that, because it scared me for just like my heart sank and I thought that I just killed a wild coho, but it was a misclip. But still, it's worth always, like you said, always doing the double check and then always, you know, understanding that, you know, okay, if fishing's really good, you might not even have to deal with it or even want to deal with it, but yeah. Don't hide it.
That's right. You know, and I guess the other one I want to bring up here, since we're talking about the standard questions, barbed hooks.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
We hear all kinds of stories from anglers about, well, we heard there was this officer at X time at X place that went out and they brought out a cotton ball, and that's how they're checking for barbed hooks. They're going to see if that thing catches
anything. I've heard it, yeah.
And it's not true. We even had a legislative request on this last year asking questions about how we deal with barbed hooks. And the fact is, it comes down to exactly what I just said about a misclip. It's going to be officer discretion. But did somebody actually take a good faith effort and try to mash that barb down?
Sure.
And if they did that and it's obvious somebody did that, we don't expect somebody to take a file where, the, you know, a lot of these things are brittle and the actual,
right.
It'll actually break off.
Yes.
And so that's pretty hard when you're in the field. But if somebody mashed it down and maybe it's barely sticking up, we're going to ask people to get it back down. Now, the difference is if we've cited somebody for something like this before, issued an infraction, we come out and we see it again.
you've had the discretion before.
we've had this conversation before. You've received a ticket for this. Right. Yeah, you know how to do this. We might be issuing an infraction again. But for most folks, discretion, just do a good job of getting it down as best you can. Have a pair of pliers with you. Don't think you can do it with your fingers because that's not going to work.
No,
and
I have heard the cotton ball thing. So that's good. Yep. That's good to know. And the reality is too, guys, like I remember, I'm not even going to talk about the exact product. One time I had questioned you about a hook gap thing. And I walked up to you. We were at the CPAC tournament. Is it Ridgefield? I don't even know if you remember, but you deal with so much of this stuff. And I brought up a measuring tape and I'm like, is this out of bounds? And you're like, Cameron, if I ever find my officer measuring that, he's like, I want their name. He's like, this is not something that, like, you know, it's the discretion, it's this, but like, if we are going to go to that definition where that thing is off by like 1/32 of an inch, like that you can't be wasting your guys' time.
That's right.
You guys are got way too much other things going on.
Well, and it's about providing service to the public. That's that's ultimately what's there. And I'm just going to be honest, our rules can be complicated at times. And when we have new anglers, your business and this channel is working with new anglers and people that are getting into this sport. We want to encourage that. We don't want to discourage that by taking the regulations and holding it to the fine detail. We're all human. We all make mistakes. Are people trying to hold to the rules? That's what we're looking to. What's the intent? What was their intention? Were they trying to do the right thing? It doesn't mean that there's not going to be some accountability that's held out at times, but that's
the
most
important thing. You are responsible to know, and we even say this a lot, like you are responsible to know every rule before you partake in any fishing.
Yep.
I mean, I think it says it right there on the first paragraph of your license. I mean, like, it's like, or somewhere in there. Maybe it's the first page of the license book.
Yeah, it's in the fishing pamphlet. It's called strict liability. It's the it's the angler. It's the sportsman's responsibility to understand what the rules are before they go out and do it, at least for fish and wildlife.
It's not a good excuse.
The I don't know just doesn't cut it, right?
Fair. Totally fair.
It wouldn't work for speeding either. I didn't know that there was a speed limit.
Well, I didn't know it was 25 in here. I was going 80. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
What is the craziest thing? So what is the craziest thing you've seen in the hunting and the fishing over your like 12 years? Like, do you have any like stories that kind of stand out that, you know, something outlandish, something that'd be like, I can't believe this guy did that. Or even maybe one of the dumbest things, like guys trying to hide fish, or I mean, I'm sure you've seen it all. I mean, you said, you probably have a scale of what you could.
I mean, so I'm on my 20th year right now, and there's a lot of things that I've probably forgotten at this point. But we're also general authority peace officers, so we're running into a lot of things that aren't necessarily fish and wildlife. And so if I were to tip the scales and say just on the fish and wildlife side, when I worked down in Raymond, I had a couple people getting ready to go to blows over an elk during elk season. They both had firearms. They were ready to go at it over an elk because they both claimed they shot it. And it took me getting out there and saying, well, if neither one of you want to take responsibility for this, I guess I'm going to take it and go donate it. And it was amazing how quickly that got them to agree to who shot it, and one person left and the other person tagged the animal. It's pretty problematic for me. I mean, they're up in the middle of nowhere. I'm the only officer within 20 miles. And that was before we had GPS transceivers on our trucks. Nobody knew where I was at. That kind of stuff got kind of old. Don't really see it anymore. A lot of good violations of people hiding fish, taking off in the brush. In fact, here recently, it's still going through. I won't give a lot of details, but we were on the North Fork and found a couple guys that were down snagging. I could hear the poles ripping in the air at night. Yep, that snap. Go down, find these two gentlemen. Mm-hmm. No licenses. We've had some contact with them before, but they were pretty cool. Well, it ends up one of the guys takes off running. Pretty sure he jumped in the river and swam away during the contact. And one of the officers found him a couple days later. But that stuff just happens, and you just don't expect it until it's just like right there. And
you didn't jump in after him?
No, I did not. We did have drones, and we looked for him for a while, but we couldn't find him.
Well, thank God he lived.
So there's that. On the general authority side, we don't do pursuits. At least our agency doesn't anymore. Our vehicles aren't pursuit rated. But back when we did, there were some pretty memorable occasions of like a stolen police car coming out of the Yakima area through Goldendale, chasing people through the field after it went, like those arrestor nets on an aircraft carrier to stop the plane that's busted the cable.
Yeah.
The truck went down a hill, or I guess this SUV went down a hill into a field and hit one of these big field fences. And it was like an arrestor net, and it just stretched and then sucked the car back, and the guy jumped out and took off. people running from the cops out of Multnomah County. There is a lot out there. It's a really memorable job. There's been some really scary moments, but there's just been some amazing moments too. And it's fun to be out there and working. And as you can see, I'm a captain. I don't get to do that much anymore. So this brings back the memories of all those good times. So,
well, you can still do it, though.
Oh, yes, I can still do it. Absolutely.
You brought up an area that, you know, a lot of people talked about, too, and mentioned on the live feed, and you were talking about snagging at Cedar Creek. Mm-hmm. And there was, like, you in a prior discussion, you know, to this podcast, we were talking, and I brought it up saying, you know, people always ask, why don't they do anything about it? Why won't they do anything about it? Do you want to shed some light? Is there some light you can shed just kind of on that whole situation up there?
Yeah. So let me start at the Washougal. So a number of years ago.
No river names, by the way, guys. I'm kidding. You can say whatever river name you want to.
Okay. So there was a Southwest Washington River out in East County, in Clark County.
Right by Camas.
So there was we have the weir on the Washougal. And it used to be people could fish up to 100. Whoops, sorry about that. People could fish up to 100 feet from that weir. And we were just constantly there. There were people there at night. There were people there in the morning. It was constant snagging. Everybody was up to that line and then crossing it. Like, you've got the entire river, but now you're 100 feet. I wonder if I could get into 50 feet, right? It took a lot. We had just received a records management system so we could start tracking all of our citations better, talk about times a day. And it took an effort for about 2 years of documenting how many tickets we wrote there and how many of them were snagging and other types of violations to really get our managers on board with, like, yeah, we really have a social problem. We don't want to shut this down, but we need to because of the problems. Because I was able to show that in 1 week, I think we wrote 90 snagging tickets there. And that was when those snagging tickets were all criminal. So everything was a mandatory court appearance. We literally were going to overload the courts. And as soon as we got one batch of people out of there, the next batch just came in. So
just funneled out.
It's just people coming in. It's a new crew. It's a new group. And so that was really problematic. So we showed that. Now let's segue up to Cedar Creek.
What happened? So that area was shut down.
Yeah, so now that boundary has been moved downstream. I think it's 1,000 feet from the weirs, I think what the language says, or 1,500 feet. I have to go look at it. And now that
people
problem,
ruined it for everybody.
Yep, but now the problem is gone. We don't have the snagging issue. And if somebody's in there, we have the ability to quickly respond, get somebody out of there. It's absolutely closed. And so the problem just sort of went away from a social change. Did it remove some really good fishing for the people that were doing it right? Yeah, it did.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So the North Fork of the Lewis at Cedar Creek, I wouldn't call it the same scenario because you don't have a hard wall where the fish are just blocked and they can't go. But in 2020, we changed some laws. I worked with a group of in our agency and the legislature. We added infraction options to some of our fishing charges because everything was criminal if somebody possessed a fish. So we added a lot of options. Then COVID happened. Literally, when that bill was approved, we couldn't go up to the Capitol and be there for the signing because COVID had happened. So kind of hands off for a while. A lot of things changed in society. Now we're starting to reengage. We're really engaged at that particular location because now we have these additional options where we don't have to run something through a criminal court process. It's an infraction. Simply, it's like a traffic ticket. People can just pay it and be done. It doesn't hold a misdemeanor over somebody's head. There's not a long, drawn-out process. It's a lot easier for us to enforce, and the level of proof that we need to show in terms of that infraction is a lot easier for us to prove. And it's also not going to affect somebody getting a job. Like a misdemeanor could affect somebody from getting a job at some place of employment. So this year, I don't have the numbers with me right now, but we're much more engaged in issuing process and issuing tickets at those locations for attempting to snag.
You went after it this year.
We went after it. Obviously, barbed hooks isn't an issue, but we have anti-snag rule violations. We have the fish closures where certain types of wild fish can't be kept there. That's all a lot easier for us to deal with these additional options. But in those cases where we have a really egregious violator, somebody that's
repeat,
or you know, they have three times the limit when we find them, or they're just robotic snagging, and we can talk about snagging a little bit. But if they're robotic snagging, we still have those criminal violations that we can issue and take them. And we have just different levels of discretion that we can use with people.
Yes, because like that Cedar Creek area can be a very productive area. And I'm glad to hear you guys are going in there now, because I can understand, like, when you're doing the criminal tickets only, you're ramming everyone through the court system. And you like probably like what you were doing on those Shugle, you could probably write hundreds. Oregon's got some regulations in some of their problem areas where they have float fishing only. Mm-hmm. And in that particular area, it's very conducive to float fishing because that's what we do all spring. And honestly, we do that a little bit, you know, we do that for winter steelhead and stuff like that. And has Washington, or have you ever heard of like that mechanism to just make that whole area, like, you know, from like creek to creek, just float fishing only?
Yeah. So I haven't, and we work pretty closely with the managers here in the region and statewide. I haven't heard that one, but one thing I'll say about rule changes is we're always chasing the latest rule because it will take care of the problem. And what we've seen with like stationary gear restrictions, anti-snag rule, there's always an evolution of the gear to fit within those constraints and still allow individuals to maybe have an advantage. So like with anti-snag rule, when it first came out, you had, you know, you've got the weight above the hook and you can't have weight below the hook on the same line, all this different stuff. Well, now people have gotten smart, and so now you've got the 8-foot leader, you know, at the weight, and you've just got to corky down at the hook. And it changed, like, from the way we thought that gear would be used originally. Now it's morphed, and it's still within the definition. But to answer
people
your question,
the system.
They do, and they're just trying to get that competitive edge. And sometimes that competitive edge gets us to a point where it's bordering on unsportsmanlike conduct. And then also unlawful conduct. But the bobber fishing, I don't know that we've looked at that yet. But as we continue to see an evolution of gear and everything, I think there's a potential for anything to happen with our gear types.
I mean, I could see people doing, like, especially in the upper run, I'm just going to, you know, localize baseball here, but like the upper run, I could see people totally sweeping still with floats. And so I could see how people could still game the bobber thing. And then, like, you have the boat situation where the guy's hovering down below. Might be a little tougher for them. And I know a lot of those guys are fishing legitimately. Yep. Like, not all of them.
but
for the most part. But I could see why. Yeah, you could.
Yeah, and
up,
that's the hard part is how much do we want to disrupt the legit anglers that are out there that are doing it right by having to further regulate the gear types or the manner or method to take care of
the
1%.
Right.
I mean, it's hard. I will say when we were dealing with the Washougal, it felt like more like 50% of people were part of the problem.
Oh, you can apply that number up there. I shouldn't say that. Be nice to me if you guys are fishing up there. Don't flame me too hard.
Yep.
Let's see here. So we talk a lot about twitching.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to keep you too long because we got to get to our live feed, but this will probably be the last one. But twitching is snagging, according to some.
It can be, not necessarily. Again, this is going to come down to discretion and how people are actually twitching. So if let's go to jig fishing, for example. Some people think jig fishing is aggressively setting the hook on the upswing really aggressively, whereas my understanding of when I jig fished, it was a quick drop and a slow up and then a quick drop. So it's reverse jigging. And when we hear that excuse, so I think twitching a jig is just a little different in terms of how it works, but it's the same philosophy that if there's robotic movements, if it's real strong movements of the pole, there's a point at which fish isn't going to voluntarily bite that hook the way it's being used.
Right. And you guys have seen it all. Like, yes. So like, you know, if you're out there with bad intents with twitching, I've told people that too. And it's funny that you know, I teach the class, like, so we're going to be up at Sparco tomorrow doing our bash. And so I talk about the twitching. And I always say, I want you to drop the rod faster in the air because I want to see the line hang in the air. I want you to give the jig enough slack to where it falls freely on it, because that's where you're going to get the reaction. It's not the upswing. Mm-hmm. By the time you go to lift the rod up, he's either going to be there because he's already grabbed it or he's not. But we get a lot of new anglers, you know, that come through the brand and definitely like, oh, well, isn't that just snagging your twitch? Or twitching is snagging. And then there's some kind of old timers out there.
There is nuance to the method. Oh, and when you're good at that, you're going to do it well. But there's a lot of people that just say, oh, well, this is probably what this looks like. I'm going to do it. It equates to attempt to snag. Because really when we're snagging, when an individual is snagging, they're harvesting a fish, they're retaining it. But if somebody's out there just robotically doing it the wrong way over and over and over again, and we see consistent foul hooking of fish, maybe they're releasing them, maybe they're not. There's a problem with the manner of fishing.
Yeah, we generally talk about, like, if you end up snagging a fish or two, like, you're probably doing it wrong, adjust your angles. And I always tell people to kind of keep the rod between your knees and your head, because then you don't, like, line wrap and do a bunch of other things. But cool. Yep. Well, like I said, for all you snaggers out there, you're not fooling anybody. What's the one thing that you want to say to the public or anybody that, like, listening to it to make your job easier out there before we go?
I would just ask that everybody thinks about this as an activity. It really is a privilege, and privileges can go away if there's bad behavior. We want to make sure we maintain our fish runs. We don't want to be impacting native species. We want to be doing everything we can to be doing it within pretty close to the letter of the law. There's always going to be something where somebody makes a mistake and it's honest. But if you do make a mistake, just be honest about it. Own up to it. If you're asked by a fish and wildlife officer what's going on, don't make up a story, because the chances are we've been watching for a while before we contact people. And as soon as that conversation starts and it's going the wrong direction, the way our discretion and the ability we have to maybe do other things goes away is somebody just buries themselves deeper. So be honest, please.
And add a little light on that. Like, there was an issue this spring where I've received like three or four phone calls from a boundary line. We don't need to get into specifics because we got a row. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to call a captain here and just see what's going on, because I'm on the Washington State Guide Advisory Board. So like, they kind of, for the Guide Association, a lot of these members, long and short, I called Jeff. He's like, oh, we've been watching these guys with like drones, and we've had people in the, you know, all day long. So like, what they're saying is not necessarily the case. That turned out to actually be the case when I talked to a few other guys. So yeah, you guys be honest out there, be safe, always check the rules, regulations, all that good stuff. Thank you for coming in. We got a live feed to do.
Yep, absolutely. And remember, if you have questions, be sure to call our agency at one of our regional offices, or get online, look at the Fish Washington app, or check your fishing regulation pamphlet. It'll have the rules. And if you're still stumped, make that phone call. It could save you some trouble.
Fair enough. Awesome. Thanks for coming in, guys. And thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.